Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Kelly Sullivan Walton. She is a dream therapist and the author of three books on dreams. Kelly and I will be discussing enlightening stories from people who have experienced the extraordinary and tapped into life-changing wisdom from her latest book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Dreams and Premonitions. Good morning, Kelly. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I am so good and so happy to be with you, Johnny, in your mama's kitchen.
Fantastic. Really, it is a kitchen hangout, you know.
I know. I can smell. It's delicious. I'm tasting some of the sauce. It's so wonderful. So just when you look away, just know that I'm going to be nibbling on things that I probably shouldn't be.
The best conversation occurs in the kitchen, and it's always
so
heartfelt.
It's so true. Always, always. And you never get hungry. You just stay in the kitchen and nibble all day. Great appreciator of good food, and I love the metaphor of good food that feeds the soul, too.
Fantastic. It is a pleasure to have you on the air with me this morning. Chicken Soup for the Soul, Dreams and Premonition. It's a wonderful, heartfelt read. The stories are truly inspirational. Congratulations on that. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Oh, wow. Okay. I've got four sisters. One sister is closest to me in age, Shannon. And during the different moves that we had, I always shared a bedroom with Shannon. Her bed would always be close to mine because we were closest in age. And we have a very close bond, like very psychic bond. And we started having tandem dreaming experiences when we were kids. The first time I remember that was when I was about five, and it was around Halloween, about this time of year. If people are listening live, it's Halloween time. And she and I shared a similar dream. So we woke up in the morning, and I talked about this scary witch that was chasing me around a castle. And she said, "Oh, my God. And was she trying to push you off?" And I was like, "Yes." And she was like, "I was there, too." And I said, "Yes, I know. You were there." So we, because of that, we started paying attention to our dreams, and we started talking about dream characters that would show up in both of our dreams. And yes, we're sisters, so some of the same characters from our lives would show up, but it always felt like there was a similar theme. And that we didn't know that that was, you know, something that didn't happen to other people regularly, but it was a source of entertainment for both of us, and also insight for years, and it still is to this day, all these years later. But I always knew that there was something to dreams. I always knew that there was another life that we were living the moment we closed our eyes. And I always knew that there was something worthy of respect, even if the dreams were strange and didn't initially make sense. So that's just been a natural thing that I've done, kind of like a fish that's naturally swimming in water. And then about 20 years ago, I became a certified clinical hypnotherapist. And began working with clients and their subconscious mind, and it surprised me how many clients would come to see me with their dreams, because we were kind of, as a hypnotherapist, I stir up the subconscious mind. That's the primary place that we deal with things, and I started to, instead of just focusing on my own dreams, I started to focus on helping other people navigate and understand the wisdom of their own dreams. And I did this very naturally and in a way that people said, I had so many people tell me, "Oh my God, Kelly, you should write a book on this, because it's so empowering to hear your perspective, even on these dreams that seem so scary or horrible. There's like a positive diamond that you always seem to find." And so after I heard that enough, I began taking notes, and I wrote my first book. It's called I Had the Strangest Dream, The Dreamer's Dictionary for the 21st Century. And then I wrote It's All in Your Dreams, Dreaming Heaven, and then the Dream Oracle Cards. And then I met Amy Newmark from Chicken Soup for the Soul. And this experience of putting this book together has taken everything to a higher level, because in many ways, I knew everybody dreams, clinically speaking. We all dream three to nine dreams every night. But I had no idea how many other people around the country and the world were having extraordinary life-changing dreams and premonitions. But I was mostly focused on the dreams. And so we got about 5,000 submissions for this book. Mm-hmm. And I was floored at just the level of synchronicity and power. So it took my appreciation and respect to a whole other level, and it was very difficult to pick the 101 stories that now are in Chicken Soup for the Soul, Dreams and Premonitions. But I'm very proud of each of the stories that we did select. Each one to me is very special and important, and I think when people read them and hear about them, it inspires them. It affirms that life is good, and even during a challenging time, there's something positive that we can find to keep going and to pay attention to how wise we are. Our dreams reveal our hidden wisdom that we don't even know is there. So that kind of brings me to today, and I'm so thrilled to get to talk to you. Now you're part of my dream story. And it's hard
thank
to tell if
much.
It's a dream or reality. It's wonderful.
Thank you so much. The number one question I have with someone like you is this a divine gift in terms of being able to interpret dreams and premonitions? I know I dream. There are times where you are so vividly involved in the dream, but yet when you get up, it's all gone. You can't remember a thing. So in your case, is this a gift, a divine gift?
Ah, I think that's a great question. Well, yes and no. We all dream. Scientifically, it's proven. Clinically speaking, we all dream between 3 to 9 big dreams every single night. So dreaming isn't a divine gift because we all dream. Mm-hmm. However, what most the average person in the Western world anyway doesn't value dreams, so we don't go out of our way to look for them because we're more focused on the external world. In indigenous cultures, they all, as a practice, most indigenous people would always, they wouldn't dare wake up in the morning without paying attention to a dream because they, partly because they don't have CNN to compete with them. You know, they would need dreams. So in a way, it's a blessing to not have so many distractions because there's this natural inclination toward paying attention to what's most natural, which really is what's true. So I think part of it is just our culture that takes people away from dreams. But yet, even in indigenous tribes, there's always those that tend to have really vivid dreams and tend to see them in vivid detail, and they do tend to forecast the future, and those people usually become the tribal shaman. And not everybody in the tribe is supposed to be a shaman. There's a job for everybody. So usually, one definition of shaman is one who dreams, one who sees that which isn't visible to most people. So yes, it is a divine gift. I feel very, very blessed that dreams speak to me and that I do have a gift for being able to pretty readily be able to interpret them. Mm-hmm. However, I must admit that there are dreams that come to me, even though I am a frequent flyer. Every day I remember dreams and I write them down, but still I get puzzled by them and I don't know. And I think I just have developed a habit of not having to know what the dream means in order to respect it. I think most people, unless the dream makes perfect sense to them, they think it's ridiculous and they throw it away, whereas I am kind of like one of those people that goes through the garbage and finds jewels that most people throw away.
Sure.
I say, oh, my God, this is amazing. Yeah. Why would you throw this away? So part of it is the muscle that I've built, and part of it is natural. But we all can, if we choose, develop that muscle, and we're all better for it when we do.
That's very interesting. I'm looking at from a perspective of two parts to this equation, perhaps even three. One, you mentioned about the indigenous groups and so forth.
Yeah.
It's true that they don't have CNN, but what they do is that's their process of wanting to know. We all have this urge as human beings wanting to know what is coming up tomorrow, today.
Yeah.
And so they are looking at towards perhaps channeling and connecting with the Divine One, whether it's their ancestors or whoever that may be, in finding the answers of everybody is seeking to do the right thing. Yes. Obviously, they're looking for the guidance, for lack of a better term here.
Yes.
Then you have the flip side of the equation. I remember when I was growing up, I loved watching Dracula movies. At night, when I go to bed, I would be having all these terrible horror dreams. It reminded me of the horrible stories that I saw, the movies about Dracula. You know how they
it's very dramatic? Yes.
I'm not trying to segue into something different here, but my point is, like, can dreams themselves be, can I concoct my own screenplay and direct it within my mind while I'm sleeping?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this is lucid dreaming that you're talking about, and it is a learned skill. Some people, like you, the previous question you asked about, is it a divine gift? Some people have a divine gift for being able to be lucid in their dreams and be able to move things around, kind of like your gift. But for most people, it's something that they really have to work hard at. It's not easy. It's not effortless. But once you find your way to being able to move things around in your dream, it's incredible. You realize how much power you have to be able to shift things and open things up and explore. And you realize that you have some directorial input over your dreams and over your life. It's a tremendous gift. One of the things, though, that I love to say, because for most people listening, except for the random exception to the rule, they're not going to be lucid dreamers. Because it's just statistically speaking, most people are not, and they get jealous when they hear about people like you that can, you know, that are so good at that. But what I tell them is, if there's a dream that is upsetting to them, or a dream that they really love, and they missed out on the opportunity to do something with it in the dream, you can still work it out in your waking state, meditating on the dream. I do it all the time. So some people say, "Oh, I was flying in my dream and I didn't want to wake up, and I was so disappointed when I woke up, or I won the lottery and I was so sad when I woke up, or I met the man or woman of my dreams." And I tell them that the dream isn't over just because you woke up. You can always pick the dream back up simply by going into a meditative state and contemplating it, and knowing that there's a kind of a parallel track, and you can redirect and play with that dream in your meditative state. That's kind of that world between worlds. So that, I hope that helps.
Yeah. Why do people need to believe in dreams and premonitions?
Well, you know what I love about Chicken Soup for the Soul and this book, Dreams and Premonitions, is that it's not a book that tells anybody that they need to believe in these things. Most of the books, and most of the time that I've spent up until now with this book, I feel that I've been kind of like an evangelist trying to prove to people how important dreams are, because they are. It's statistically proven that when people pay attention to their nighttime dreams, even if they don't know what the dream means, even if it isn't necessarily precognitive, they have better navigational acuity in their waking lives. They tend to make better decisions and solve problems better. So I'm constantly telling people, hey, look, Harvard did a study on this. This is important. Pay attention. But what's great about Chicken Soup for the Soul is that there's no statistics written in the book. There's no attempt at trying to convince anybody. It's simply 101 stories from ordinary people that had extraordinary experiences based on a remembered dream or a premonition, and you see in the story how it changed their lives for the better in dramatic ways. So you don't need to necessarily be convinced. You just simply need to read a few of the stories, and maybe we can talk about some of those in a moment. Because I think the stories, what I love is that the stories speak for themselves, and I think human beings, we are storytellers, and when we hear a really good story, we don't have to know the statistics. We just know, wow, if it worked for her, if it worked for him, then, you know, I'm kind of like him or her. That can work for me too.
Very interesting. In your introduction, you talked about author Caroline Mice saying that when it's bizarre, you know it's the hand of God. So elaborate that a little bit for us.
I love that quote. I find myself using it all the time. It really, I mean, in life, when things are just strange, when they don't make any sense, during Mercury retrograde, during times when things seem to fall apart or they just don't make sense, I feel very excited because I remember Carolyn May saying this, that, this is God doing that. If things are normal and they make perfect sense, that's when I'm suspicious. That's when I feel like itself will run riot. But when it's bizarre, it's the hand of God. In our dreams, no place are things more bizarre than in their dreams. And here's one of the dreams that you didn't necessarily, I got a list of some of your favorite dreams, but this is one that you didn't list, but I think is like a perfect example of the codpiece, the curious case of the codpiece. One of the dreams Debbie Weissman talks about in the dream is she dreams about a codpiece, which is a piece of body armor from thousands of years ago or hundreds of years ago. Mm-hmm. And it covered up male genitalia. And she said, why am I dreaming about this? I have no connection to this. This is the weirdest thing. But she was in a dream group of mine. And I always say, well, don't throw the dream away just because it doesn't make sense. What does it represent to you? And she says, well, it's a covering for something that's very precious and very important. And I said, so where in your life might you be covering something that's that's very important and potent to you? And all of a sudden she broke down in tears and said, and you could see that she had been very covered, very much in a shell, kind of like a turtle. And and she said, I know that what's most precious to me has been covered up because I'm afraid of being hurt. And so this dream was really, really valuable to her. And she writes about how with the awareness of this very bizarre dream that caught her attention, she was able to go about the business of dismantling her armor and taking conscious steps toward revealing her deeper feelings and her talent and her creativity. And she's since written a book called 101 Dream Dates about how to treat the one that you love in the best way, which is yourself, ways to honor yourself. She's got another book coming out now. So there's all kinds of things that she has physically done as a result of that one strange dream that's really made a difference. So I know we should probably talk about the dreams that meant most to you, but I thought since you brought up strange dreams, please, anybody who's listening, do not throw your dreams away just because they're strange. In fact, the stranger the better because they catch our attention. Just like my mosaic dream that I write about. It's the first story in the book. That it was similar to that because that dream made no sense to me, and yet I kind of it changed things for some people. Should we talk about that?
Yes, please do.
Well, it's a very it's a heavy dream in some ways, but it ended up being such a blessing. So similarly to Debbie Weissman's codpiece dream, I was in the process of doing some grief counseling with a family that had just lost a son, a mother who had just lost a son in a tragic car accident. He ran out of gas on the freeway. And since, by the way, I always pay attention when my tank is low, I always go out of my way to get gas. I don't push it. So everybody who's listening, please do the same. He ran out of gas on the freeway and was hit from behind and he died. And then when I found out about him, Brian, through his sister, Catherine, she asked me if I would do some grief counseling, which is not what I normally do. I work on the level of dreams and personal development, but I don't typically work with people on the level of grief. But when she refused to not take no for an answer with me, I said, okay, how could I say no? And I was about to work with the mother of Brian. And so I prayed the night before for a dream that could help me. And I was very specific. And sometimes, when we're specific, I think we always get our questions answered. We always do. And all I woke up with was the word mosaic. And I wrote it down in my dream journal multiple times, trying to get something else from it. Like, what else, God? What about mosaic? This doesn't mean anything to me. I like mosaics, but I don't have a deep connection to them. So it was very abstract. But I was like a dutiful secretary. I wrote it down and I paid attention to it. So I'm having the session with Margarita, my client who just lost a son. And, she was crying, telling me about the funeral and about how much she loved Brian and how much she missed him. And she was, you know, it was a roller coaster of a session. And she was telling me about, towards the end of the session, she was telling me about all the flowers that they had received and all the beautiful notes and letters and cards that they received, people telling them how much Brian was loved. And she said, but the gift that was the most precious that I received was this mosaic that I got from one of Brian's best friends. And this mosaic is a compilation of pixels, of pictures that make up one big picture of his smiling face. But if you look close, it's hundreds of small pictures of Brian in his life. And I said, did you say mosaic? And she said, yes, I've been looking at it this whole time during our session. And I said, oh my God, I have to tell you about this dream. So I tell her about the mosaic, and we both just were flabbergasted. And then I, you know, tears came out of my eyes. And as the therapist, you're not supposed to cry, but I did, and she did. And yeah. And it was a moment of like, what? This felt supernatural. It felt like Brian had delivered a great synchronicity for us to pay attention to know in some way that, and her interpretation of that was that it was confirmed in some way that he had survived this thing that we call death, and that he was, in fact, the many pieces of him were intact, and that he still was with us and with them. So it became the beginning of many synchronicities and many dreams that her and her family had about him that were very just beautiful confirmations that this tragic story wasn't the ending. It was just one moment in the story, and that he, in fact, was okay. And it's been very helpful for them to be able to process this, their grief. They kind of have this special sense that he is, in fact, still with them. And I believe that he is.
Right. So, it's a beautiful story. There are a lot of stories in the book that talks about the connection with people that have passed on, loved ones. I think one of the areas of opportunity when it comes to dreams is that opportunity to perhaps, dreams are the conduit to connecting with loved ones in some ways. And if you believe in that, one of my moms told me, it's very interesting, like if you look at it, we don't see radio waves, we don't see TV waves in the air. They are instruments to sort of decode all these waves so that we have picture, we have sound on our radio and so forth. So there are people, on the other hand, that are built to whereby we have certain things within our body, our mind, like you talk about, that you can discipline, you can train that muscle to connect and harness that signal for yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we're always being communicated with. There's one story that kind of really expresses this. There's so many that really talk about what's going on the other side. There's one story in here called The Mentor, and it's Val Mueller, who is a school teacher, and she as sad as it is to admit, she doesn't enjoy being a school teacher, and she has this dream of wanting to be a writer, but she doesn't really know how to get started. So she's suffering, and she's actually making herself ill with her suffering. And she has this visitation from her grandfather in a dream where he vividly tells her, honey, you don't have to make such a big deal out of this. You're a very good teacher. It comes naturally to you. Why don't you teach by day and write by night? You can do both. And let it be a beautiful transition. And so she wakes up from this dream no longer sick, and she had been sick for quite a while, and she says, you're right. So she does begin doing exactly what her grandfather says, and she begins to write at night, teach by day, and cut to present tense, she's been published multiple times, and she continues to teach, and she enjoys it, even though she enjoys being a writer better. But she's so grateful for her deceased grandfather for this wisdom. In fact, she dedicated her first book to him because it was so, her, that revelation so helped her. And there's so many stories in this book about our departed loved ones that come through in a dream or in a premonition that absolutely radically alter our way of doing things that nothing in our waking life necessarily could. So it makes me think, wow, she had just not remembered that dream, she'd still be suffering. And
right.
Because of that, she's thriving because of that remembered dream.
Right. So true. Having said that, can you please tell us the various chapters that's covered in the book?
Oh, yeah. There's some great ones. And we have one chapter called Navigating Life. And these are stories that really demonstrate how our dreams help us to make better navigational decisions and to heal. There's Messages from Heaven. That's kind of like the dream I was just telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some other great ones. We've got Facing Fears, Early Warnings, The Next Generation, Waking Up to a New Life Path, Life Savers, True Love, Personal Transformation, Love Doesn't Die, and Miracles Happen. We had so many stories that at some point Amy said, well, we need to try to find a way of categorizing these. And we realized, yes, there are themes to these dreams. One of the main themes is definitely departed loved ones coming in and helping to reveal a message. Can I tell them about the It's Okay dream, Johnny?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
I love this story because it's so, God, it just feels so real. And I cry in a good way every time I read this. It's by Stephanie Sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this one touches my heart because I'm very close to my sisters, as I shared at the beginning of our interview. My
mm-hmm.
sister Shannon is very close to me. So in her story, her sister has been diagnosed with terminal cancer. And her sister is painfully thin. And of course, Stephanie is trying to tell her, you're going to be okay, you're going to be fine. And her sister saying, no, I'm in a lot of pain, and I have a feeling that I'm not going to survive the week. And she's just says, I don't want to leave. I've got two daughters. And why would any God that's a loving God take a mother away from their two daughters? And Stephanie keeps telling her it's going to be okay. And her sister says, her sister Terry says, no, I don't think it is okay. And why do you think it is? So they're kind of arguing. And Stephanie says, okay, well, I think we just need to have faith. But, of course, I don't know for sure. I don't know what's going on the other side. Why don't you tell me, when you get to the other side,
mm-hmm.
if it really is all okay, find a way to let me know. And her sister said, okay, I will. So literally less than a week goes by, and Stephanie is at one of her daughter's plays at school. And while she's sitting in the audience, she hears a voice say, Stephanie, whispering her name, Stephanie, where are you? And she looks and she doesn't see anybody, but she does see this kind of aura, this kind of smoky mm-hmm. light in front of her. And she hears that voice whisper to her, it's okay. And she looks at her clock because she wants to remember exactly, as if she's looking for clues, and it's 7:02 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
She comes home from that school program with her daughter. The phone is ringing off the hook. She picks up the phone, and the person on the other end says, I hate to tell you this, and Stephanie says, I know. Terry passed away, and they said yes. And she said, do me a favor, tell me what time. And so they scramble around, and they find it was at 7:02. So she got the message from Terry at 7:02 that it was okay, that on the other side it really is okay. In spite of what we think, in spite of our loss, it
mm-hmm.
is really okay. I love this story for its simplicity, and yet
right.
it really, really hits close to home. For anybody who has lost a loved one and maybe hasn't remembered a dream or hasn't necessarily gotten that confirmation, we can borrow the one that we just got from Stephanie about this amazing confirmation that it really is okay.
There's so many wonderful stories in the book. It's fascinating, and I love the way it's divided into the 11 chapters that you have in the book.
Yeah, yeah.
Ultimately, what would you like for the readers to gain from reading this wonderful book?
Oh, you're so sweet. I think if anybody is looking for, you know, I think some people come to this book at different places. I think a lot of people pick up Chicken Soup for the Soul books when they're going through a rough time. And I think Chicken Soup for the Soul has become synonymous with kind of it's like a blanket. It's a verbal blanket that we can wrap around ourselves and feel reassured that life is good and life is worth living and that there's something higher that is on our side. Like Einstein said, the most important question we can ask ourselves is this universe friendly? And he, the smartest man who ever lived, according to many people, said that yes, this universe is friendly. So I think that one thing that people can get from reading Chicken Soup for the Soul is that yes, this universe is friendly. Yes, our dreams are part of this vast web of life that we're connected to that is in fact helping us, making a difference, making our lives better, giving us insight that we might never have known was possible. It's helping to heal us, and it's helping us to sort out our problems, helping us to navigate our lives better. So what I hope people will get from this book is whatever it is that they really need that meets them on a soul level. That really, I think, is food, I know that you like the food metaphor. I think it really does feed the soul. It nurtures the soul. And I think it will make you smile. It will make you cry in a good way. And I hope that people really get that, you know, I think when you hang around people that have a really strong precognitive gift, it kind of rubs off on you. So I think what you'll get from it is you'll be able to pay more attention to your own precognitive gifts and your own gift of understanding your dreams. So I think those are some of the practical things that people will get from reading this book.
I agree. What I got from the book in the sense that we all have the ability to really tap into the so-called resources, however that may be. We just need to hone our skills and focus on what the answers that we're looking for. I think that's the most important thing. I love the beautiful picture Amy and you have selected to cover each chapter. As a matter of fact, the pictures lead to each chapter. Is there any intended message you two would like to convey from that beautiful picture?
Well, I know that Amy mostly is in charge of these kinds of things, and she, I know that not all Chicken Soup for the Soul books, in fact, most of them don't have an image that opens up each chapter, so it's kind of special that we were able to do this, but I thought that it was a tremendous synchronicity because my first story that opens up the book is the mosaic story that I just shared with you about Brian, the young man on the other side. And I think to me, when I saw this image, I thought, oh my God, this is Brian. This is like Brian's like the patron saint of our book. And it's throughout the book. So I kind of unofficially dedicate this book to Brian Newcomer. He's in his waking world, like at the funeral, according to Margarita and those there, there was thousands of people at his funeral. I mean, you know, most people get maybe 100. Sure. He had thousands of people. 'Cause, and the people that got up to speak afterward all said that Brian was his best friend. Or their best friend. Like everybody thought of Brian as their best friend because he was such a special person. I mean, everybody's special. Everybody has gifts. But not everybody makes every person that they cross paths with feel so good and so special and so affirmed. And Brian was that kind of guy. And so I think this, I look at this image and I think of Brian. And I think that he's so that everybody else can get a sense of him, not just through the mosaic story, but I think he's just kind of throughout the book. So I think he's up there in heaven looking down on all of us and helping all of us to remember how special we are.
Wonderful. I have selected some stories from the book as talking points for this morning. I know we have addressed several of those stories, as a matter of fact. I'm so delighted that you did so. There are still additional stories that I'd like you to talk about. Let's start with the chapter titled Facing Fears. And the title of the story is A Smiling Journey in Darkness by Walter Berry.
I love this story so much. And by the way, just as a side note, to hear Walter share about his story is so amazing because he's got such a great voice. He's such an animated character. And I did an interview to launch this, to launch our book. The interview with some of the authors is available on my website, and you can download it for free. So if you go to I Had the Strangest Dream, which is also KellySullivanWalden.com, and you put your name and email address in, you can get an audio recording so that you can actually, for free, listen to some behind-the-scenes interviews with some of these authors. And Walter Berry is one of them. And Walter talks about how he is a dream worker. Most of the people in this book are, you know, are ordinary people that didn't necessarily normally pay attention to dreams. But Walter is one of the few people that are actually, he works with dreams. He's kind of a dream therapist. He leads dream circles. So he says that in his normal way of working with things, He loves talking about death dreams and all kinds of scary things that are in dreams. He's really quite powerful in that realm because he sees that anything that relates to death in a dream is a message or a symbol of transformation. So it's all a good thing. But he said in real life, in waking life, he was a death chicken. He would never go to the hospital to visit people because he just couldn't handle it. And funerals, he travels a lot with his work. He would always pray that he would be out of town for any funerals or any passing of even a pet. He just couldn't handle it. It would break him apart. And, you know, it's hard for all of us, but he said he avoided anything having to do with death in real life, like the plague, until he had a dream where he had a dream that he was stopped at a red light, and then the light turned green, and he proceeded through the intersection and got plowed over by, I think it was a truck, and it scared him in the dream, and he woke up startled. And then in real life, not too long later, he's at a stop sign or stoplight, and it was exactly like in his dream, and something told him to wait, even though the light was green and he was supposed to go by traffic laws. Something told him to wait, and he remembered the energy of that dream. And sure enough, a car comes barreling through the intersection, and it would have killed him. He literally like just started sobbing and laughing at the same time, like, oh my God, his dream helped. It was such a brush with death that it just kind of opened him up to realizing that there really is more to this than he realized. It was very personal. And then he had a dream after that about Buddha, and I'm paraphrasing because it's a very long dream. In fact, his story is probably the longest story in the book, and I had to ask him to edit it down from about 10 pages. Most of the stories in this book are about a page and a half or two and a half, and his story is quite long. It's worth it. But he basically is shown these monks, and Buddha takes him to this place that he thinks is supposed to be death, but it's a smiling journey into darkness. And he realizes by the end of this dream that they've taken him into this place that's beyond this life, and it's just more life. It's, you know, it's better when you read it because you get his details. But basically, he wakes up from this dream knowing that death is just part of the journey. I'm just going to read this last little piece that he says. I woke up and recorded this dream, and when I got to the part about death being just another place, I had some sort of awakening that stayed with me ever since. It's difficult to explain, but if you have ever had that experience like this, you know how the soul can spend endless time searching for something, and then the unexpected answer hits you upside the head like a huge truck. I live with death inside of me now, and it feels fine. And when my second dog died, well, I held him gently as they administered the drugs that caused his life to ebb from him. And I was fully present and tuned into what was going on. I saw his tiny spirit rise gently and leave the room. Someday mine will also, because I get it now that death is just another place, a smiling journey into total darkness. So I love that. I love that. And to hear him share about it is pretty outrageous. He's definitely a funny and brilliant character, Walter Berry.
Yeah. I chose that story simply because it reminded me about the experience I have with my mom in Malaysia when she passed on. I had the opportunity to be there.
Oh, really? I wondered why you liked that story. I figured you had a personal connection to that. So what happened to you?
Well, when I got the call from my sister telling me that, hey, you need to be here like tonight because mom is on her way out, and like, sis, it's not practical. I'm in Dallas, Texas, and you're in Malaysia. It's going to take at least 3 days for me to arrange everything and catch the first flight out. Mm. And it is to say, I got there in time. We took mom home to her room because she wanted to pass on at home in her bed, in her room, basically. When I got on the plane, everything was really calm within me, and I just don't know why. I believe in life's rhythm. So I'm just going through this rhythm and just getting into the process. Everyone was sobbing when she passed on. I was there kissing her head and stroking her hair and telling her, whispering in her ears, telling her that it's okay to pass on. Everything will be okay. And I felt at peace. I felt that she's at peace. She knew that I was there. It was just a wonderful spiritual experience. From then on, something within me changed. There's a sense of peace. There's a sense of like knowing that everything is fine, that this is a transition, so to speak. Ever since then, things have changed for me from inside out. I've mentioned this to some friends of mine, and to a lady friend I mentioned, I said, what's interesting in my life is that I needed to go through this to have the experience of seeing how life expires. And at that moment in time, we can see how that is an equalizer. And at the same time, if I am a woman and had given birth, then I would have experienced the full cycle of life and death, so to speak, giving life and seeing life expiring.
Mm. Oh, Johnny, that is such a beautiful, beautiful story. I'm so touched. And I applaud you for bringing such consciousness and such love to your mother's passing and then receiving such a gift that you're then able to pass on. I mean, this, to me, is one of the most important things we can do. Well, I mean, this season that we're in, I know that your show gets archived, so people will listen to it hopefully all year long. But for people who are listening live or near right now, it is Halloween time, and this is the season where we come to peace with and even make light of the veil between worlds and the fact that this is a journey that we're all on. And I, you know, I'm surprised sometimes because I go out of my way to embrace anything that's related to death. And I'm a dream worker also, and so many dreams of dying show up. And I always see it as dreams about dying are symbolic of big change. But also, I think they're also preparing us for the inevitable so that we can find a peaceful way of being with that. And if we can do that, like I love that Walter Berry's story, The Smiling Journey into Darkness, leaves him with more of a sense of freedom and peacefulness in his waking life because he came to terms with this. Then I feel like we can live instead of like quivering throughout our lives, terrified of our own shadow. We can be bold and we can have fun and we can enjoy ourselves, not necessarily be reckless, but enjoy this precious gift without being so morbidly afraid. And I know that I was talking to somebody the other day about this because Dia de los Muertos, I have an event coming up this weekend that's celebrating Dia de los Muertos. It's a fundraiser for the nonprofit organization I'm a part of. It's called thechimein.org for those interested. But he was talking, well, why do you have to celebrate death? I mean, there's nothing to celebrate. And I was like, what are you talking? He's like, oh, it's just so morbid. It's horrible. Like, what? No, it's not. In one way, nobody wants a loved one to die. We want people to stay around forever. But as you see in these stories, and there's another story in here that's so wonderful. Oh gosh, can I share about it really quickly?
Go ahead. Yes.
Trying to find the title of it. I don't have it off the top of my head, but it's about a woman who is a struggling actress, and she can't get hired to save her life. She's just struggling, and nothing's working out for her. And because she can't get any work as an actress, she can't pay her bills, so she's feeling like a loser. And because she feels like a loser, of course, any romantic partnerships are like, ooh, she's kind of like got the plague. Nobody wants her. So she's just, it's like the worse she feels, the worse she feels. And she's in the dumps having just a dark night of the soul. And she has a dream about her best friend who had passed on a few years before. And her best friend is in the dream sitting across a table from her. And she sees her in the dream, and the woman who's having the hard time says, oh, there you are. I've missed you. Let me tell you about my horrible life. And she just starts telling her the laundry list of all the horrible things in her life. And her friend is listening patiently. And then her friend, finally, after she's heard everything, stands up and slams her hands on the table and looks at her and says, but you're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman says, oh, you're right. I'm still alive. Oh, my God. I've been complaining about my life to a woman that no longer has life. Oh, my God. And her friend says, basically, go live your life while you still have it. You're still here. And while you're here, there's still something you can do about it. And know that just being alive is the gift itself.
Right.
Like, don't waste it. So she wakes up from that dream with a completely changed, completely transformed. And because she has a new frame around her situation, it reminds me of the movie It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm,
I don't know if you've seen that movie with George.
Yes.
But where his life is falling apart and nothing changes, but he has a new perspective that changes everything. And all of a sudden things do start turning around, and our woman in Chicken Soup for the Soul, Dreams and Premonitions, she does start getting some acting work, and she does meet a new guy, and she does start paying her bills, and things do start working out because of this dream that helped her to change her frame. So I think the messages we can get from those on the other side and the way that we can use it in our waking life is so precious, and it's really life-affirming.
Right. So true. The next story that I chose is The Next Generation, The Journey to Grace by Dr. Sam Collins. I really like this story.
Oh, and you're not going to believe the synchronicity about this story. So I'll tell you in a second, but with my journey to grace, and I'm covered in goosebumps. That's another thing that you can expect from reading this book, Chicken Soup for the Souls, many goosebumps or goosies, as Jennifer Lopez or J-Lo likes to say. Okay, so Sam Collins is, she's a very accomplished, she wrote a book herself, by the way, called Radio Heaven, about her life. And she's had an interesting story. Her mother took her life when Sam was young, and she had a really difficult time pulling herself up by her bootstraps and wanting to stay alive herself. And she did, and she ended up finding a reason for living and has become a really successful life coach in England. In fact, she was recognized by the Queen of England as being one of the most powerful women in England to support other women. So Sam's got a very successful business, and one day she lives in California now, and she's got two children. She's married to a wonderful man, a friend of mine. This is how I know her, her husband, Robert Silverstone. And but one day she had this very strong premonition of being in the future and seeing this young girl walk into the room and call her mom. And the girl was black, and Sam has very fair skin. She's light skinned. and it felt, she was just so happy about this daughter. And she kind of came out of this reverie with, wait a second, I already have two kids. I'm done having kids. And besides, my husband and I are both white. What are we doing with a child with dark skin? This doesn't make any sense. But soon after that, she watched a television show that kind of came, like a commercial about girls in the Congo. and how it's the most dangerous place for a girl to be a girl. And long story short, she began exploring the possibility of adoption and adopting a young girl. And it's been a harrowing journey, very, very difficult, because there's a lot of kind of corruption that makes it difficult mm-hmm. to just simply be able to adopt. But that premonition was so strong. She stayed persistent. Finally, she got a message from the woman she was working with. And Sam had always loved the name Grace and thought that they would name her daughter Grace. Because often mm-hmm. you get a name that's very African sounding, and you change right. the name so it's more American sounding. So her and Robert decided that they were going to name her Grace. And Robert calls her one night, because Sam was in England doing some work, and said, "Did you see the email?" And she said, "Yeah, I saw that they found us a 5-year-old girl." He said, "But did you see the email?" She said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "There's a picture in the email." She said, "What, there's a picture? We can see her? Oh, my God, oh, my God." So she scrolls through. She hadn't seen it before. And there's a young girl with a little placard that she's holding with her name, and it's Grace. Her mm-hmm. given name was Grace. Given name was Grace. And it's not a common name in the Congo
yeah,
to name a girl right. Grace. And they didn't know. The adoption agency had no idea that Sam was thinking of calling the little girl Grace. But here right. it is, Grace. So she knows that is our girl. Yes, we're going to take her. Yes, she's ours. I don't care that she's mm-hmm. older than we expected to get, but we're getting her. And long story short, Johnny, I'm so happy to say mm-hmm. that last Saturday, a week mm-hmm. ago, I got to meet Grace. They just got her after almost two years and 9 months. The
wow.
story in the book ends with her on the journey to get Grace,
mm-hmm.
but not mm-hmm. knowing when or how long it would take, and they just got her. I got to meet her, and she is so beautiful and so precious and truly a grace-filled miracle. So glad that you picked that story to talk about, because I was kind of afraid. Actually, this is the first time since I've been doing this book tour mm-hmm. on this book that I've talked about this story, because
yeah.
up until a week ago, there wasn't a happy ending, really, on this story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because because we didn't know. I mean, Sam thought, well, maybe we'll get her when she's 18 and she can travel by herself, because it was
yeah.
seeming so hopeless. But there's something about that name Grace that I think that kind of let me know that a miracle was going to happen.
Right.
At some point. Thank you for asking about that story.
It's a beautiful story. It reminded me about my situation with my parents back in Malaysia, because I was adopted at birth by my Malaysian
wow.
mom. She had gone through 3 miscarriages before she adopted me. My father and her had gone to see a sage that had told them that this boy is meant for you and is just resting in this person's womb. That's how I related to that story in terms of the next generation. So it was quite interesting.
Oh, that is so beautiful.
The final story that I selected for our conversation this morning is True Love, Matchmaker by Stephanie Liberman.
Oh, yeah. This is a great story. But I just first want to say that that I love that your mother has made a full circle appearance in
yeah.
in this conversation. That I think it's really amazing. I think your mom is here with us.
I believe so.
How beautiful. So in this story, Stephanie is and I'm trying to find it in the book right here, so forgive me for looking
sure.
through it. But I know that she's not looking for love. She's kind of trying to not have love in her life for a while. She's kind of disheartened, as many of the stories actually in our book start with it not being the happiest of moments. It's kind of a heartbreaking moment, and she's kind of not that excited about love, and she had been friends with a guy named Evan for 10 years, and she has a dream about him one night that they're dancing, and they're on this, but they were just friends, and they hadn't mm-hmm. been, they'd actually had an argument And they hadn't spoken in a while, but she has a dream where they're dancing with beautiful ball gowns, sparkly gowns, and it was such a lovely, happy feeling that she actually called him after 8 months of not speaking, and they probably wouldn't speak again because they had this argument, but she calls him and says, "I had this dream about you," and he interrupts her and says, did it involve dancing?" And she said, "How would you possibly know that?" And he said, "Because I also dreamt about you last night, and we were dancing together," and he describes the very same dream that she had, to just like I was telling about my tandem dreaming with my sister. This is quite profound. So they took that as a sign. They decided to get together and have a visit. And once they got together, they realized how important they were to each other and in each other's lives. And they moved past the argument that they had. And now they've been married for a few years. And that dream was a catalyst that got them dancing together in more ways than one. And I have a feeling I know why this dream is important to you, Johnny Tan the dancer. Can you tell us why it's such an important dream to you?
There's something special about when people dance.
Yeah.
There's a nonverbal communication involved. The communication that we, for the first time, for the men's side, is to be vulnerable. And for the women, on the other hand, is to really to develop trust for your partner.
Yeah.
I bring this up because I am a ballroom dancer and also teach ballroom, and so I thought that beautiful story ought to be told on the air because we have helped so many people in dancing, in ballroom dancing, to strengthen their relationships.
Wow. So romantic. And you're such a great dancer. Well, multi-talented are you. Not only a great show host, but dancer and many, many other things. It's such a wonderful thing. Yeah, I always like to think that when we follow life's navigation, that we treat life as if it were a dance. And life, God, the universe is leading the dance, and it's our job to be an excellent dance partner with life, whether we're a man or a woman. I love the way you express that, though, to be vulnerable, the man to be vulnerable and the woman to learn to trust. That's so true. I love this story. It's so vivid and visual. It's like, what a message. And there's several others like that in this book that just point in the direction of true love. So if somebody's listening and they're lonely and they wish that they could find the love of their life, well, pay attention to your dreams because they may be leading you to the one for you.
It's true. We don't realize this sometimes. Like I mentioned before, life is a rhythm. It's interesting that in dancing, it allows us to get into this rhythm of feeling for one another. As a matter of fact, my dance partner and I will be teaching at a couples retreat this weekend and talk about the fundamentals of ballroom dancing. This is very interesting. The ones that's been married for a long time, guess who is in charge? The wife is. You need to go this way. You need to go that way. And, of course, the ones that just got married, the man is in charge and so forth and all that. So, you know, whatever, honey, you know, let's do whatever you want to do. So it's so funny
dear.
How to roll.
Right.
The key element here is that before you learn how to lead, you need to learn how to follow.
That's good.
Yeah. So before you learn how to follow, you need to have humility.
Johnny, I think my husband and I need to take your class. He always tells me whenever we do dance, Kelly, you're leading. And I'm like, oh, shoot, you're right. Oh, my God.
It's all that type personality, you know. It's really interesting. So it's all that type A personality.
It's so hard to stop doing that. Oh, God.
Right. Right. This way. Anyway, so...
These days I'd love to be in your class. I think that's wonderful. I hope everyone listening will sign up for your workshop. I'm sure it'll be life-changing.
It's interesting because when you look at in terms of the nonverbal communication side of the equation, that's where true communication develops.
Yeah. Oh, so true. So true. So. What a powerful metaphor. I love it.
Where can someone go to get more information about you and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, they can go to Chicken Soup to find out more about Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And our next book, by the way, that we're seeking submissions for, so if anybody's listening and they have a great synchronicity story or a great dream story, they can go to chickensoup.com and go to the Submit Your Story button and put in your story for the to be considered for the Chicken Soup for the Soul Dreams and Synchronicities book. But for me, my website is KellySullivanWalden.com, and if that's too hard to spell, you can also go to IHadTheStrangestDream.com, and that'll take you straight to me. And as I said before, if people want to hear, they can get a dream declaration meditation from me, as well as a behind the scenes of Chicken Soup for the Soul Dreams and Premonitions, if they go to my website, IHadTheStrangestDream.com, and put in their name and email address on the right side. They'll get all kinds of dream gifts, and including that. They can also go find me at Dream Life Coach Training. I have a certification program that's a virtual program. It's a year long that people can take to learn how to use dreams at and incorporate that into their coaching practice. It's a wonderful program that I am very excited about. They can find me on Facebook at Kelly Sullivan Walden Dr. Dream, or Twitter at Kelly S. Walden.
Wonderful. We're coming close to the end of the show. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
My basic recipe for living, this is going to be very practical, and it really relates to dreams. So imagine that you wake up in the morning. My first suggestion is that you go out of your way to remember your dream. Because if you don't go out of your way to remember your dream, it often evaporates like smoke. And so you have to remember your dream and immediately write it down. Don't think about anything else. Just write your dream down first. And then once you've written down your dream, meditate on the dream, asking the question, how is this dream trying to help me in my life? How is this dream a solution to a challenge that I'm going through? How is this dream offering me some guidance? And just meditate on the dream with that question in mind and journal about how that might be so for you. Allow yourself to journal, because often that's one way that we access our own inner wisdom. We are all so wise, and most of us leave a lot of our wisdom on the layaway plan and we don't access it, but it's easily accessible through journaling and through paying attention to dreams. And then throughout the day, look for signs, look for synchronicities, look for little things that line up about the dream that you might have had, like the mosaic that I had. I noticed a sign in my waking life that coincided with that dream. And when you notice one of those things, something that lines up with a premonition or a dream, pay attention to it, honor it, speak about it, share about it with somebody, write it down, do something in the physical world. Last night I had a synchronicity and I had to call somebody and share with them about it. So honor it by doing something physical with it. And then notice how your life becomes a series of one magical moments after the next. Life is meant to be magical. It's not meant to be suffering. We're meant to enjoy ourselves. And this is one formula for being able to really get maximum enjoyment out of life.
That's fantastic. That's a really beautiful recipe for living. Kelly, thank you so much for that wonderful recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Marie Jagopoulos. She is an intuitive counselor, healer, and spiritual mentor. Mary will be interviewing international best-selling author and life empowerment coach, Lorraine Purcell. They will be sharing Lorraine's secrets to living a happy, authentic life as a busy mom. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Kelly, it has been a true pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you, Johnny Tan. I love your mama's kitchen. It's been such a wonderful, wonderful hour with you. I look forward to connecting with you again soon in dreams or in your mama's kitchen, however, or on the dance floor. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.